I'm Ann Agee. I'm the CIO at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. And with me today, I have Donna Kuzanga, who is the Dean of the College of Liberal Arts at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. As you know, in this article, we've been discussing cyber infrastructure, and we've used a definition that defines that very broadly as hardware, software, communication, services, facilities, and personnel that enable researchers to conduct advanced data-intensive research. And traditionally, this kind of cyber infrastructure has been associated with science and engineering research. But today, more and more humanities and social sciences scholars are needing that kind of infrastructure. So, Donna, I wonder if you could give us some ideas about how that kind of research is impacting the humanities.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think there are four principal ways that the cyber infrastructure impacts the humanities. One is it gives scholars and teachers ways of assembling interdisciplinary multimedia materials that they couldn't do before. And I'm thinking particularly of a website that was developed here by a historian and a literature scholar, which deals with, I believe, 17th century London and puts out for students a way of looking at the time period they're studying, which is much more interactive, which brings them to many more primary sources, and which gives them a whole new point of view. And this is obviously based on the faculty members' research. I think the second way that it's changing things, especially as university presses struggle with less and less income, is that it's changing how people publish. Journals especially are increasingly going online. And I think that this is a particular boon for the humanities, where there's no tradition of underwriting journals by page costs and so forth and so on. And so they tend, even though they're the least expensive, they tend to suffer the most by some of these cutbacks. I think there the trick is that it's not really the medium that matters, although obviously to publish an electronic journal, you need the right infrastructure, you need some kind of digital commons, you need some kind of staff support to actually get things where they are. I think the real trick there is that the refereeing issue is the same whether it's on paper or whether it's digital. And that's the thing I think people haven't necessarily fully worked out or come to terms with. I think that some people are suspicious of things that are published in electronic journals simply because there's an association in people's minds between self-publication and things that are on the web. And I think that one of the things that we as a community of scholars are going to have to come to terms with is understanding that we can employ essentially the same types of refereeing processes for electronic publications that we employ for others. I think the third thing that's important is the work that libraries and archives are doing all over the world to make materials available to scholars online. And this is something which really is of enormous help to the humanities because often we work in historical contexts, often we work with things that have not been republished in the modern age, and so to the extent that things are available online, it's a great blessing. But it's a very complex situation for a couple of reasons. Number one, there's no guarantee that the documents that are being put online are the documents that you need or are, for example, the authoritative text of something. And because there's so many different instances doing this, libraries who pull from their own collections, things like Google Scholar, et cetera, it's hard to know whether you're going to be able to get what you need on the internet. And then the other thing does have to do with the technologies, especially in the beginning. A lot of things were put up there as photographs, which makes it impossible to search them, for example. And so if you have a 1,000-page volume with no table of contents and no index, which is a quite common thing, and you can't search it in any way, it's true that you now have it digitally, but you're left to flip through it much like you would if you had the paper copy. And I think the final area is probably the most interesting, and that is the way in which we could really move some kinds of research forward. I'm thinking, for example, of software that looks at language patterns or some of the kinds of software that's used in social science research, qualitative research, which does discourse analysis, for example. And I think those things have been little exploited in the humanities except in some authorship studies. And I think there's enormous potential there that's really unexplored. Now, this requires a much more complex infrastructure because depending on the problem you're trying to address, there may or may not be pre-existing software out there. If not, it would require very close collaboration between IT people and the researchers and a very good understanding of what the problem is that you're trying to address in order to come up with some way of doing this. I was for about 5 years the president of an international organization which does research on the history of the French novel before the revolution, just to be very precise about this. And we worked to create a database, which still exists, of the elements, the basic narrative elements that constitute the novel. And the hope was and still is that this will allow people to look across broad swaths of text, for example, to look at different issues than you can look at if you're doing this in a different way. But what I learned from that project was how hard it is to do this in the sense that, first of all, this was an international collaboration and every country and its universities have their own ways of funding such things, have their own rules for how it is done. And beyond that, then we had to get a platform, a stable home for this database, a stable server, a stable support person, and so forth and so on. So it turned out to be a very complicated enterprise. Because we were working across so many institutions and because every institution had its own policies, I think one of the things I hope as the future opens up to us in these ways is that through more sharing of information, more common ways of operating will occur across institutions and will make this kind of collaboration possible. It's a kind of collaboration which was very difficult before we entered the information age and now is in principle very, very easy, but in fact is very, very difficult for some of the reasons that I just stated.
So given those kinds of needs, as the university looks to build up its research infrastructure, how do you see researchers in the IT unit being able to collaborate to enhance that for us?
Well, I think that in many other parts of the university, there are calls for proposals for various kinds of research funding. It may be that if information technology has resources to support research but doesn't have infinite resources, which I'm sure will be the case, that there ought to also be calls for proposals. And obviously the scientific community, in the strict sense, is going to use the majority of those services. But it would be good, I think, to have something set aside for the humanities, just the way the University of Massachusetts President's Office has a research fund for science and technology and one for the creative economy. And so it would be nice to have an opportunity to have a call for proposals. That would be the best way to connect people right away. And then there'd have to be some resources behind those proposals. So that's one part. Another part is the extent to which the library here can get humanists access to the kinds of bibliographies, databases, and so forth and so on that are available out there. Many of them are free. Some of them are not. And so it's the sum of them that are not that would be very, very helpful. And I think that there are real chances to make this work, but I don't think it's going to evolve by a sort of global commitment. I think it's going to evolve by people doing specific projects and then being able to build on that basis to have something more general available. So I kind of like the idea of a call for proposals.
Great. Thanks very much for your insight, Donna.